All right, welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. We're diving into a big one today, a really fascinating case, United States v. Bronner.
Definitely a landmark case.
A 1972 case that had a huge impact on, like, how we think about the insanity defense in the U.S. legal system.
It really changed the game, for sure, especially if you're a law student. This is a case you'll definitely want to know inside and out.
Yeah, I mean, this case goes way beyond just memorizing facts. It gets to the core of, like, you know, how the law tries to deal with these really tricky questions about mental illness and whether someone's criminally responsible for their actions.
Absolutely. Huge implications for criminal law.
So today we're going to break down the specifics of Bronner, the whole story. We'll look at why it led to such a big shift in legal thinking, and we'll talk about the lasting impact it's had.
Sounds good.
And a big part of that, of course, is this whole move away from something called the Durham Rule and towards the ALI model penal code test.
Yeah, that's the heart of the matter.
So let's jump right in. Before Bronner, like, what was the main approach to the insanity defense? What was the Durham Rule all about?
Okay, so the Durham Rule had been the standard in DC for a while, and it basically asked this question, right? Was the crime a product of the defendant's mental disease or defect?
Product. That seems kind of vague, right?
Exactly. It was pretty open to interpretation, which, as you can imagine, caused a lot of problems. It often came down to expert witnesses, like psychiatrists, basically deciding whether someone was legally insane. And that wasn't really fair.
Yeah, it feels like the jury should be making that call, right?
Absolutely. So the Durham Rule, you know, it had good intentions, but ended up being really messy in practice.
Okay, so let's talk about the specifics of Bronner itself. What exactly happened? Like, what were the events that led to this case ending up in court?
All right. So this case, it starts with a pretty tragic incident. September 8th, 1967, Archie Bronner, the defendant, he was at a party, gets into a fight, gets hurt pretty badly. Understandably, he's upset and he leaves. But as he's leaving, he makes this chilling statement. He says, "Someone's going to die tonight."
Oh, wow. So it's like a direct threat.
Yeah, a pretty serious one. And about 30 minutes later, he comes back to that same apartment building. He's got a gun now, and he starts shooting through a closed apartment door. Tragically, one of the bullets hits Billy Ford, who ends up dying.
That's awful. So obviously a terrible situation all around. And I mean, Bronner's mental state is at the center of all this, right?
Bronner had been diagnosed with what was then called an epileptic personality disorder. Now, during the trial, there was a lot of debate about what this diagnosis actually meant and, you know, how much it might have played a role in his actions that night.
So did the experts agree on, like, how much his mental state influenced his actions?
Well, that's the thing. They didn't. There was a lot of disagreement among the experts. Some thought his disorder was a direct cause of the shooting, while others weren't so sure. And this back and forth among the experts, it actually became a key reason why the court started to question the whole Durham Rule.
I see. So, like, if the experts couldn't agree, how could a jury possibly make sense of it under this vague Durham standard?
Exactly.
Okay, so how did the case actually play out in the lower courts?
So initially, Bronner was charged with first-degree murder, the most serious charge, right? But the judge actually directed an acquittal on that specific charge.
What does directed acquittal mean exactly?
It means that the judge basically said there wasn't enough evidence to even let the jury consider a first-degree murder conviction. In this case, the judge felt the prosecution didn't prove premeditation and deliberation, which are essential for first-degree murder.
Okay, but he wasn't totally off the hook.
Right, right. Even though he was acquitted of first-degree murder, he still went to trial for second-degree murder and weapons charges. And the jury ended up convicting him on those.
Wow. So even with all the questions about his mental state, they still found him guilty of a pretty serious crime.
Exactly. And that's why this case is so important. It really brings us to this core issue. What's the right legal standard for deciding when someone's not criminally responsible because of a mental illness?
Yeah, such a weighty question. So what was the specific legal question that the Bronner court was trying to answer?
The main issue was whether the Durham product test, which was the standard at the time, was actually the best way to handle the insanity defense. They were considering replacing it with the American Law Institute, the ALI, model penal code test. Basically, they were asking, is our current system for figuring out if mental illness absolves someone of criminal responsibility actually fair and effective?
I see. So Durham versus ALI. There's another piece to this puzzle, right? This mental disease or defect definition.
You got it. The McDonald case, which came before Bronner, had already established a pretty broad definition of mental disease or defect. It basically said that it includes any abnormal condition of the mind that significantly affects a person's mental and emotional processes and their ability to control their behavior.
Okay, so that definition was already in place.
Yeah.
So the Bronner court was weighing these two tests, Durham versus ALI, against that backdrop.
Exactly. And the court ultimately decided to make a change.
They went with ALI.
They did. The Supreme Court decided to adopt the ALI model penal code test as the new standard for the insanity defense in DC, basically overturning the old Durham rule in that jurisdiction.
So what does the ALI rule actually say? Like, how does it define legal insanity?
So the ALI rule says, and I'm quoting here, a person is not responsible for criminal conduct if at the time of such conduct, as a result of mental disease or defect, he lacks substantial capacity either to appreciate the wrongfulness of his conduct or to conform his conduct to the requirements of the law.
Okay, so that's the ALI rule. And it sounds like the court stuck with the McDonald definition of mental disease or defect, right?
Yeah, that's a crucial point. They changed the test for how mental illness affects criminal responsibility, but they kept the existing definition of what actually counts as a mental disease or defect.
So, new test, same definition, got it. But why the change? Why did the court think the ALI test was better than the Durham rule?
They had some pretty good reasons. The Durham rule, as we said, was really criticized for relying too much on expert witnesses. Like, it basically put psychiatrists in the position of deciding guilt or innocence, which wasn't right.
Yeah, the jury should be the one making that call.
Exactly. And the word product in the Durham rule, it was just so vague. Jurors were often confused, and the rule was applied inconsistently. So the ALI test, on the other hand, offered clearer guidance. It focused on the defendant's capacity, like their ability to understand their actions were wrong or to control their behavior according to the law. That made more sense for juries.
So more concrete, less abstract than the Durham rule.
Right. Plus, by 1972, a bunch of other federal courts had already adopted the ALI test. So the Bronner decision basically brought DC in line with what was becoming the national standard.
It's kind of like a legal trend at that point.
Yeah, you could say that. And finally, the court felt the ALI test struck a better balance. It still let experts testify about the defendant's mental state, which is super important, but it said the jury, and only the jury, gets to decide the legal question of criminal responsibility.
So experts can inform, but the jury decides. That makes sense. Were there any judges who disagreed with this shift to the ALI test?
There was one, yeah. Chief Judge Bazelon. He agreed that the Durham rule had problems, but he didn't totally love the ALI test either. He wanted a simpler approach, one that focused on what he called just responsibility.
Just responsibility. What did he mean by that?
His idea was that at the jury's main focus should be whether it's morally right to hold the defendant responsible given their mental state. Basically, a more direct ethical question. He worried that even the ALI test gave too much power to psychiatrists and didn't really address the bigger systemic issues in the justice system.
Like what kind of issues?
Well, he was particularly concerned about unequal access to good mental health evaluations for defendants who couldn't afford them. He felt that the ALI test, while maybe a more organized standard, didn't go far enough in making sure everyone had a fair shot.
So Bazelon was raising some important points about fairness and access. Looking back, what's the legacy of Bronner? What's its lasting impact?
Bronner was a game changer, no doubt about it. The move from Durham to ALI was a huge attempt by the court to give juries a better system for deciding these incredibly difficult cases involving mental illness. It shifted the focus from this broad product idea to a more specific look at the defendant's actual capacity at the time of the crime. Could they understand right from wrong? Could they control their actions?
So, a more focused and specific test. But did it solve all the problems?
Well, not quite. Chief Judge Bazelon's concerns are still relevant. We still struggle with making sure everyone has access to good mental health assessments, and courts still have to figure out what to do when experts disagree.
Yeah, I can imagine those are ongoing challenges.
Absolutely. The thing is, Bronner really highlights this ongoing tension in our legal system. We want clear legal rules, but mental illness is complex. There's no easy answer. So we're constantly trying to balance these needs for clarity and fairness with the reality of human psychology and morality.
Right. It's like the law trying to catch up with our understanding of the human mind.
Exactly.
So to sum up, United States v. Bronner was a turning point. It changed how we think about the insanity defense, moving from this vague product idea to a more concrete assessment of a person's capacity at the moment they committed a crime. And it forced us to think about how mental illness fits into our ideas of criminal responsibility.
Exactly. And even today, this case makes us ask some really deep questions. When we're talking about insanity, should we focus solely on medical diagnoses, or should we also consider moral responsibility? Bazelon's dissent really pushes us to think about this balance. Bronner changed the legal standard, but it didn't solve everything. It's a case that continues to shape how we, as a society, think about law, morality, and the human mind. And those are conversations that are still going on today.
Definitely a case that's worth revisiting and thinking about deeply.
Absolutely. It's a reminder that the law is always evolving, always trying to keep up with our understanding of ourselves and the world around us.
That's a great point to end on. Thanks for joining me on this deep dive into Bronner. It's been a fascinating discussion. And for all you listeners out there, keep thinking, keep questioning, and we'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.
See you then.